Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Nathan Totten, joined as usual by Nick Harris, and our special guest today is Vittorio Bertocci.
Thank you, guys, for having me.
Or also known as, what do you call
Admiral
it?
Identity.
Admiral Identity. Oh, you were promoted. Captain Identity.
Thank you, guys.
Excellent. So let's start with the news. Pretty light news week for Windows Azure. We only have a couple things to talk about. First one is Build, yes. Windows event. Registration was opened as of the morning
today,
of recording.
On the 8th.
It'll have been open for several days. So hopefully there's still spots available. If not, it'll certainly be available. I believe it's streamed online, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, not too sure about that.
I don't know, actually. I think it will be streamed online, hopefully, anyway.
Scroll down there for a bit and let's have a look at the
tracks
we've got.
While we're the tracks. Let's see. Yeah. Oh, there we go.
Look at that.
So all kinds of content, of course, yeah. Windows Azure, Windows Phone, and probably Windows will be covered there also. Windows 8, that's been high probability. That's been something that's fairly important recently. So the next thing we have is in your neighborhood. We've got a nice picture of you there.
At least that I could pose.
So why don't you tell us, we've got the WIF components are now in NuGet, which is pretty awesome.
Yes.
Why don't you tell us a little bit
yes.
about that?
Finally, thanks. So now the runtime of Windows Identity Foundation can be redistributed using a NuGet package. So that largely means that you don't need to actually install the runtime, which is traditionally distributed as a Windows update, since it's a Windows component. Instead, now you can just go in Visual Studio, and when you need it, manage NuGet packages, Windows Identity Foundation, enter, it's there, you add it. And above all, now the new EULA allow you to redistribute this thing, so that once you have your application, you can actually distribute the DLL with it. So you don't need to install it in the target system and similar. So on, it was some time we wanted to do that, and now that finally we managed. The hope is that people will take advantage of that. And the interesting twist here is that as we move toward the Windows and the .NET Framework 4.5, you won't need to, because now the classes of Windows Identity Foundation are jammed at the very heart of a .NET Framework in nice. MS Core Lib.
Cool.
So now any principle derives from a claims principle. And so once you move to 4.5, you don't have to worry about that. It's already in the package. But for the time being, like if you have existing systems that target .NET 4.0 or even 3.5, then you can take advantage of that.
Cool.
Nice.
And for Windows Azure, this makes publishing a lot easier, right? So before you'd usually do, like in a cloud service, you'd do a startup task, right? Or you do copy. A lot of times we did startup tasks. You'd have to specifically do copy local, and now it's kind of all built into you know, the same way you deploy MVC 4 or 3 or anything like that.
So. That's exactly right. There are situations in which sometimes, like there is a bug somewhere in the HTTP stack where you might have to add it in the global in the GUC, but. It happens pretty rarely. Like normally, you just do bin deploy, and you're fine.
Cool.
So is that corrected then now with the NuGet? Does it still
need
to be installed
in the GUC?
No,
NuGet just gives you the bits, and you can deploy them. Right. And in the majority of cases, it will work. There are occasions in which if you see problems, just try to put it in the GUC in your target system and see if it solves it. Because we observe that there is this bug, and we are working on that to see what we can do about it.
Is that bug documented, or is it just... It's a guess. if it doesn't work, just try to.
Well, it's more of a heuristic. Let's say that if there is a bug, it's actually not in Windows Identity Foundation. It's more into a stack.
I see. So if you run into some problem, the first thing to try is to install.
Exactly. In fact, I shouldn't probably have said it's a bug. It's more of like a troubleshooting suggestion. Like sometimes, if something doesn't work, it's a good trick to see if that thing solves.
Cool.
All right.
Awesome. So, like I said, pretty light news week. We don't have too much to talk about. So let's go ahead and jump right in. You'll be talking to us about probably something identity related.
There is a solid possibility I'll do it.
And also, you'll be doing several magic tricks, right?
Yes.
We'll edit them in. It'll be fine.
I brought my doves, my USB doves.
And pull a rabbit out of your virtual hat. We can probably have Bob put a hat in there.
Turn you into a bumblebee. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I actually don't need a hat because we have you'll be surprised by all the animals that I can start in here.
There's a dove in there somewhere.
Doves are among the most kind animals that I can bring. I can bring more dangerous ones.
There's a lion in there also. It's very, all right. We'll take a break and we'll pass the computer over to you.
Right, so Vittorio, we've seen several announcements on the Windows Azure blog talking about Windows Azure Active Directory.
Yep.
And for some of our audience, they may not have read the blog, so they may be interested in what it is. I myself am as well. Could you perhaps tell us what it's all about?
That would be an honor and privilege. So, the first thing I'd say is, if you have time, by all means, check out the blogs, because I think that they do a good job in framing what this thing is, and also by giving you the pointers of the thing that you can use for taking action on that stuff. In fact, you know what? So Windows Azure Active Directory is new platform as a service offering that we have as part of our capabilities in Windows Azure. And substantially, it is Active Directory reimagined for cloud-based applications. So when you write in a cloud-based application, you want to be able to do many of the things that you would normally do in one application on-premise. So you, of course, want to sign in your users, and especially you want to do things that are typical of a directory. So for example, let's say that you do the classic expense note application, in which as a user you go and you create your expense note, and you just, submit it, and that's it. Then this application needs to query your directory for knowing, for example, who your manager is, or if there is an interim approver, or if there are other relationships, or perhaps you could put it in some automated stuff like seeing which team you belong to and do some math for saying this today to the manager, this team has spent X. So all those things require this application to reach out to your directory and query it. So when you move this application to the cloud, for doing sign-in, you can always use Federation. So that even if your credentials live on-premise, we have these great protocols which substantially allow you to hit the application on the cloud, see that I'm not authenticated, go back to today you are on-premise directory. Yeah. Hit on the on-premise directory, authenticate using this protocol, and then just come back and you bring this token is signed with the authority that you need, and there you go, I'm authenticated. However, that doesn't help you to know who my manager is, mm-hmm. or if you needed to do queries, or even if you needed to do more advanced stuff, like say that this is not an expense note app, but this is an issue management app. I have issues or bugs, and I want to assign them to people. Just the fact that I came with a token, federated, describes myself as a user, but it doesn't give you the list of people that you wanted to use for picking and saying, this bug, you want it, or this other bug, I want to change it and assign it to this guy, because that other guy is in vacation, all stuff like that. And when you move to the cloud, all those things are pretty complicated. And we found out in a pretty, interesting fashion. When we moved Office to the online version of Office, so first BPOS and then Office 365, we just had to go through these various workloads. And we tried different different alternatives, but we did find out that even if you'd find a way of coming back to your on-prem directory, the latency is unacceptable. And other solutions, like the solution that you commonly see in the market today, like you sell a software as a service app, you need all these things, so you ask your customer to upload every couple of days this comma-separated value file with all the users and stuff like that. Like, that's crazy. So basically, we came out with this idea that you should have a projection of your directory in the cloud, a projection which substantially knows about your users, knows about the relationship between the various users, and we can still rely on the on-premise ability of authenticating, so we can still use federation. However, we can greatly simplify things by having this multi-tenant central environment that can be used for gating all those interactions. So that substantially, if you are an ISV and you wanted to onboard somebody, instead of like every time going and negotiating the low-level details of their directory, they can just go through this central place. And this central place does give you also the APIs that allow you to query the directory, find your users and similar, without having to go all the way to on-premise. How does it do that? There is one Windows service which lives on-premise, which periodically does a one-directional sync toward the cloud.
What sort of frequency do you get that?
You can choose that.
Okay.
You can choose that. But okay. It's now I don't know exact details, but it's like minutes. Yep. Normally, it's pretty fast. Cool. It goes only in this direction, like from on-prem to the cloud. But we are considering doing it also in the other direction. And what we sync are only the users and selected parts of their schema. So groups they belong to, their manager, licenses, because if you bought Office 365 and similar, we don't synchronize, we don't replicate credentials. Mm. Credentials remain on-prem. Although people often ask us to also do the credentials, there are advantages and disadvantages we are considering moving forward.
So with this, does this mean, with Windows Azure Active Directory, do you require an on-premise directory then?
If I could pay you for this question, okay. I would.
Okay.
Then maybe I can buy your coffee one.
Okay.
At the coffee machine, the one for free. No, we actually don't. Because one interesting thing is, I think of this as a very Zen image, you can have the shadow of your directory without the object casting the shadow. Like we started this with this idea that you have your on-prem directory and you need to query aspects of it even when you are in the cloud. So we have this projection of your directory. However, the interesting thing is that you can also have just this projection without having the on-prem version. So exactly like today, you can go and sign up for Office 365 and you can choose to have what we call a managed tenant. Let's say that you just sign up for being entirely in the cloud. And so you create users using the portal or using the associated PowerShell commandlets and similar. And this is a full-fledged platform as a service directory that you can use for single sign-on and for querying the directory through these APIs that I mentioned. And one thing that I needed to be super clear about is when we say Active Directory, we invoke a number of concepts, like, for example, domain join or group policies or similar. Now, those are workloads that you have with the infrastructure Active Directory. Those are things that you use when you want to manage your assets. Windows Azure Active Directory is not infrastructure, it's more a platform as a service. And it is specifically for workloads for applications. So you don't join a PC to the Windows Azure Active Directory domain because that's not what the Windows Azure Directory does. If you want to do that in the cloud, there is our infrastructure as a service offering, which you could have a VM with a full-fledged domain controller, which is different. What you do with a Windows Azure Active Directory is enabling cloud applications. So it is literally the single sign-on aspect and the Graph API aspect.
And you could use Windows Azure, you could use Active Directory running on a VM in Windows Azure with Windows Azure Active Directory, correct? Or would there be a reason to do that?
Right now, under those powerful lights, it's difficult for me to conjure up a reason.
Okay.
Actually, no. See, as I said, it came to me. Like here, the main point is that the infrastructure is really something which is kind of like your private business. Mm-hmm. Let's say that you need directory capabilities for managing your assets, and that thing works, but works within the boundaries of your intranet, even if that intranet might extend all the way to your VM in the cloud. However, if you want to take advantage of applications sold by ISVs and similar, and those applications live elsewhere, in the cloud, it could be our cloud, it could be other vendors' cloud, it could be on-premise somewhere else, it could be anywhere, it doesn't matter. Like, you don't need it to be on Windows Azure for taking advantage of Windows Azure Active Directory. So at that point, you would still have the same thing that I described earlier. You want your directory to be queryable from a cloud application, which lives outside of your boundaries. So yeah, technically, you might want to do that.
Okay.
Just the same.
So the APIs that AD on-premise exposes today, and they're queryable, of course, am I able to execute queries without changing them against Windows Azure AD, or is it?
This is a very good question as well. It is actually different. like what you do on-premise is classically using LDAP. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, LDAP is a fine protocol, and I actually know the guy that came out with it. He's a very, very, very bright guy. But it's not designed for a multi-tenant environment. Mm-hmm. So here, Microsoft is just the custodian of your structure. Like, we just provide the pipes, but you, as the tenant of Windows Azure Active Directory, you are the one who does the managing and similar. And LDAP is designed more for like Visa mono-tenant system. And instead, as we move to the cloud, the ISV, which wants to query your directory, is not like your administrator. It's just somebody who is consuming this thing. And so LDAP just wouldn't have worked, both for a thing, for like its own structure, and also for the fact that you cannot assume that everybody has a stack for LDAP, mm-hmm. and instead we want literally everybody to have the capability to query this thing. And so for enabling a querying of a directory, we created a new API, which we call the Graph API. We call it the Graph because it actually behaves as a graph. Let's say that when you query it, it gives you not just the entity that you want, but it also provides some hint about the relationships mm-hmm. with other mm-hmm. objects, so that you can actually use your first query to percolate through the entire infrastructure and like extract meaning out of that. Like, again, the example that I did earlier is in I have an expense note, and I can do things like querying people that are in the same group mm-hmm. and then aggregating their how much that I'm spending that month for that specific group.
I'd like to see your expense report aggregated. Sorry, go on.
Well, if I remember well what was going on when I was back in your team, I'd be curious as well to see your expense. Okay, so, but this is all very abstract, so I'd like to actually show you this Graph API in action.
Nice.
How about that?
Good.
Yeah,
that's
all right. So let me lean over my fantastic laptop. Hide all this Visual Studio before you get scared.
No, and this is, what operating system is this here?
This is Windows 7.
You're behind the times, man. We're
I'm not behind the time. I have multiple laptops, which is why I am slightly turned, because my backpack is pretty heavy. And I keep Windows 7 on this one because for querying the directory, today we have a number of commandlets. And most commandlets currently don't work on Windows 8. Mm-hmm. So on, I need to keep my guy still a bit. But I have the other laptop that I use for the WIF 4.5 and similar, and it's fully Windows 8. And I love that. So here, as you have seen, I opened Firefox, which is absolutely not Microsoft.
It's also up
tool,
to date.
Right? It is up to date? Fantastic. Hooray. Great. And Firefox is, generic browser, and I'm using it just for showing you that you can use any tool which is capable of using REST. The Graph APIs are REST-based, more specifically, or data-based, and you can use them for substantially query your directory. And we have an application called the Graph Explorer, so that you don't need to install anything that deals with, HTTP headers and similar, and you can just land there. If you go on the announcement, you'll find the link. And you can play with that. But here, I just want to show you that it's just as easy to do it raw. So I have this client with plugin, which substantially is capable of doing things like adding HTTP headers. That's why I don't just use the address bar. Mm-hmm. And so here, first thing I need to do is obtain a token for the graph. And we have samples that show how to do that. Here, I have my little utility, which I can just use for demos like this one. And by the way, thanks to the Azure Authentication Library, which hopefully we'll have time to talk about for, this thing is basically 7 lines of code for getting it.
Cool.
Like, without using tools or anything. So let me copy this token.
Or you can require every user for your app to use the that utility.
That utility.
Just distribute that on your
trick.
Network.
Here's a trick. So here, actually, let me go on my... So here, do I have Zoomit? Let me launch Zoomit. Okay. So here, what I have is the address of one tenant. So this graphdir1 on Microsoft.com is one directory tenant. And this root, the directory windows.net, is our root that we use for performing our queries. Now, in order to make this call, for doing anything in the morning my English coprocessor is slow to warm up. I can speak in Italian if you prefer.
We'll even put subtitles.
Or I can move my hand and it would be like speaking Italian, right? You and your stereotypes. So what we had here, as we said, is we are trying to query our tenant, and in order to do that, we have to be authenticated because the owner of this tenant is the one that is supposed to query that, or anybody like the ISV, for example, who receives a delegation for doing so. And so here, just landing in that page will give us this authentication unauthorized. Yeah. So what we need to do here is to
use your token.
Get this gun here. Let me put it in the URL of this tool. And now I ruined my clipboard. Let me copy this guy again. And now, in order to do this call, since we are doing REST, of course, we need to add some information for the service side. And here I have a few headers that I already saved. So I have this thing, which basically says, dear service, I want JSON, because I like JSON better than XML. It gives me less headache. And then I have this specific header, which is just like a good service practice. Since we are using a programmatic interface, we wanted to version it so that as we move things forward with features, you can actually specify the version. Today, we are at this level. And then I have the most important header, in my opinion, but I'm biased, which is the authorization header, which is what I use for actually adding my OAuth token, which I obtained with my little utility, in which, again, there is nothing magic in that utility. You go on our graph sample, which is pointed by the announcement, and you just get it in there. And then at this point, I can just send, and I get a 200. And what you can see in here is the list of the items that you have, of entities that you can query in this directory. And we see, some classic ones that you would expect, like, for example, I have users, I have groups, I have contacts, because, hey, this is a directory. I have roles they belong to. Oops. And I have other things like the subscribed SKUs, which substantially means licenses. So there are some a few directory-specific extensions that the Windows Azure Active Directory-specific extensions. Okay, so let's actually try this graph thing. Like, now I want to know about the users. Instead of doing like complicated queries or similar, I just type users. Here I'm just sending a get. I just happened to attach this couple of things, but hey. And now I have all my list of users. So I won't go into the details. Here there's a lot of, metadata. Let me just search for, let's see if there's somebody called Adam. I actually don't know. Hey, look at that. Where is Adam?
Cool.
So here I have my user. I have the various licenses that he has. I have classic details that I would have in my directory schema. And now I can actually, now that I saw that I have the email, can actually be a bit more specific. So I'll get these. And now let me just do something to the effect of, I just want this user. And just like that, here I have my user.
Cool.
And we can play with that. Like we can, for example, you want to know of, the guy is, I never remember the, yes, for example, here we have member of, and we have a link. Potentially could just take this and follow it. Now, I don't know if he belongs to a group. My guess is that it does, but I just paste this thing. I hit send. And here I have the list of the groups that he belongs to. He belongs to all user, belongs to the sales team. So you can see how this thing has an enormous potential because I can just send an HTTP request. I demonstrate that I can because I show my delegated token. And without that, let me stress this, without the token, nothing of that happens. Like this thing is very important. It's your data and we just want to make sure that it's protected. But once you have that, once you prove that you have the right to do that, then it's very easy to navigate that. And again, I could have used the Fiddler, I could have used any Microsoft product. I specifically wanted to show you Firefox because I didn't even do much research. I just searched somewhere saying, how do I do HTTP headers from Firefox? I found this thing, installed it, done.
Cool.
You can do it from pretty much anywhere.
Oh, this is really cool. So Windows Azure Active Directory is in preview at the moment, right?
Yes.
Is there any announcement on pricing, and how that's going to break down?
This is a very, very good question. One thing that I should stress is that right now we are in developer preview. Let's say that the part that is in preview is the extensibility, which allows third parties to write applications that consume those APIs or do the single sign-on and similar. However, the directory in itself not only is in production, but it is churning tokens and calls for millions of users because it is the engine that powers Office 365. So this thing is already cranking, and it's not a science project. This is very, very well proven.
Cool.
And in terms of licensing for the standalone version, we haven't announced anything yet. Yeah. But one thing that I might say is that as we move forward, you'll see more and more services taking advantage of a directory.
Okay.
We started this as a way of enabling the workloads for Office, but Office just happens to be the first customer of this service. We already have another one, which is Intune. Intune is already using the directory. And as we move forward, you'll see pretty much all the services that require a directory in some shape or form, including Windows Azure in itself, to take advantage of this and start creating tenants for you and so on and so forth.
Cool. Okay, cool.
That's great. And I could have mentioned something about the single sign-on, but I won't, because I guess that you guys are familiar with Federation. That's kind of the same. It just happens to make things a bit easier for you, because as I said earlier, now that directories go through this central place, every tenant still maintains full control. They keep managing their users using their own on-prem directory. They just propagate. But from the ISV perspective, integrating and offering access to those customers is actually easier because there is one central place, because they just need to change a couple of strings for determining which tenant is calling, but without going into the details, the crypto of a token is the same for everybody. So once you have done that, you can accept tokens from Windows Azure Active Directory. Now all you need to do is decide if the one that is calling you is actually your customer. And also this allows smaller customers, like the ones that wouldn't normally create an on-prem directory, because perhaps they are an online-only company, there's many of them, and but they still need procurement, they need users, they need groups, they have a need in their business to have a structured organization. They can take advantage of that, and you as an ISV, you can also sell your product to them without them having to pay a bigger infrastructure price that normally they would.
So, you mentioned Federation. So, if I'm an ISV, do I authenticate directly with Windows Azure Active Directory, or is this sort of another layer, and I'm using ACS in there somewhere?
So, you raise a very good point as well. From the point of view of establishing trust, so a business relationship, it's all Windows Azure Active Directory. Now, within Windows Azure Active Directory, we have currently two flavors of what we call tenants. You have the ACS tenants, the namespaces, and then you have one specific STS endpoint, which looks like an ACS namespace, but it isn't exactly the same. This thing is something that you find at the address accounts.accesscontrol.windows.net. And that thing is the STS endpoint, which is used for all the Windows Azure Active Directory tenants, for the directory tenants. And what happens is that when you establish Federation, you establish Federation with that endpoint. And today, we happen to be supporting WS Federation, which is the same as what we had in ACS. However, looking forward, we are considering various other protocols, for example, the SAML protocol, which we've been asked for very often. We know that it's important for our customers. We are looking into supporting that. And so you can imagine, of course, I can't commit yet, but you can imagine that you will have another sub-URL on that endpoint that you hit when you want SAML P.
Okay.
Or we are looking into what we can do for simplifying. And in that respect, OpenID Connect is an emerging protocol, which looks very promising because it is actually simpler than the SAML protocol or the AWS Federation protocol. So we will likely experiment with that. And if it will turn out that we want to use it, then you'll see again in that endpoint this stuff popping out. Now, today, the tenants that you obtain through the directory, so when you get the Office 365 and you create and you provision one ISV application, you get one tenant behind these accounts.accesscontrol.windows.net STS. Mm-hmm. That tenant has a set of capabilities which is different from the capabilities that you get with an ACS namespace. Now, this is just a temporary situation, we spun those two things and that are now converging back.
Okay.
So today, if, for example, you wanted to have both users from a directory and users from Facebook, Google, Yahoo, and similar, then right now, substantially, you have one directory tenant and one ACS namespace. And then from your relying party, you handle trusted to both. Mm. Moving forward, you will have just one.
So this was Windows Azure Active Directory. We also saw some announcements last week of the Windows Azure Authentication Library. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is? And are they related? Are they different things?
Great pleasure.
All right.
The Windows Azure Authentication Library is a library which substantially makes it easy, and let me stress easy, for a developer who's writing a rich client application to connect to a Windows Azure Active Directory and obtain a token that can be used for calling REST services. It also makes very easy for a service developer, an API developer, who wants to secure his APIs using the Windows Azure Active Directory to actually do that, so accept tokens and validate them. Now, here there's an interesting point. We strive to make our endpoints as easy as possible and our protocols as mainstream and as open as possible, so that if people wanted to go directly against the protocol, they can always do so. Mm-hmm. Also, we have Windows Identity Foundation, which is a toolbox. So if you wanted to customize your experience, you have all the building blocks for making sure that things go your own way. However, those two things come sometime with some complexity price. Let's say that when you use Windows Identity Foundation and you wanted to do non-standard stuff, but even if you want to do standard stuff, you are faced with a fairly big object model, mm-hmm. and you have to navigate it, you have to understand what those things mean, and usually those things are projections of entities that you have in the protocol. So if you don't know how the protocol works, well, you are in trouble. You fall pretty from a very high place when the abstraction unravels. So with the Azure Authentication Library, we wanted to try something new. And so we substantially made one big assumption. We said, okay, let's assume that the authentication takes place against Windows Azure Active Directory. Now, this is a huge simplification because when you do that, substantially, you are relying on something that knows already a lot about your scenario. Mm-hmm. It knows about the services that you want to talk to. It knows which identity providers are trusted from that service. It knows the specifics of a protocol that is being used. It knows about certificates that need to be used for checking signatures. It knows a lot of stuff. So once we added that hypothesis, we were able to design an object model which is very, very simple. So, for example, substantially, when you think of a scenario, like you are a client developer, and you want to call a certain service because it gives you a certain capability. So you know about this service. So you know the URL that you want to use. You probably know the identifier of this thing. You know that in order to prove that you have access, you need to show something. Like, you might not know the details of what's inside, but you know that you need, like, a token, for example. As we move toward the API economy, this concept of the API key is very common. So even if people don't know anything about the details of the format, in a key, a token, it's something that you can assume the developer knows about. Mm-hmm. And then you can assume that they know that all the knowledge about the scenario lives in a certain tenant. So what happens is that we now have an object model in which the developer has substantially to go through the following steps. They create one object, which we call the authentication context, and they just initialize it with the address of their Windows Azure Active Directory tenant. And tomorrow, this thing will also not be necessary because we will be adding discovery capabilities. But for now, we just ask that people know their tenant or their namespace. Once they have that, in the easiest case, the case in which you want to do interactive authentication, we just use that context and ask that context to give us a token for the service that we want to call. And now that object will do everything that is necessary for finding out which protocols you need to use, which identity provider are in there. It will pop out a UI for you, which shows a web page with first the choices for what you want to use, and then it will actually conduct the back and forth for getting a token and giving you a token. And so after that, you will get the token, and then you can do anything you want with it. And if you are making a REST call, that basically means putting it in the authorization header and send it out. So in more or less three lines of code, you're done.
Cool. Mm.
And on the service side, it's very similar. That's to say that you again create this context item, saying I'm using that tenant. That tenant knows about my situation. And then you just pass in things like your identifier, like your realm, because the tenant might be looking after many services, so it knows that it's you in that very moment. And then in the best case in which you are using a certificate for signing the token, I won't go into the details, but sometimes you might use symmetric keys, so it's harder to automatically obtain stuff. But if you use certificates, then you are done. The only thing that you need to do is find the bits of a token in the request that you're receiving, pass it to this context and say, give me if this is a good token. And if it is, it will give you back a claims principle, which represents a caller. If it isn't, it will say, no, wrong. Again, three lines of code. And since I know that you don't believe me.
Show us the code.
So I assume this this form, your little helper, uses that, right?
Yes,
okay.
It does. It does.
Is the authentication library built on top of WIF, or is it a whole different thing?
It is that's a great point. The client side doesn't really need Windows Identity Foundation. But in this developer preview, again, it's a preview, it's just for getting your feedback. We have both of the client capabilities and the service capabilities in the same package. So the service capabilities do need Windows Identity Foundation, because right now we are targeting also the .NET framework 4.0, and since we wanted to give you back a claims principle, because it's the item that you have been using with WIF and similar on the service side, we want everything to be compatible, then we have a dependency on WIF 1.0. Moving forward, we are going to actually split the client side, which will be its own library, that then will not have a dependency on WIF, and then we'll deliver the capability that you need on the service side as individual updates, which will extend the WIF.
I see.
So at that point, you'll have a dependency only on the service side.
And the so the client side, is it just .NET 4.0 right now, or will you support, say, Windows Phone, Windows 8, you know, the whole, there's a lot of different
Absolutely.
Apps, obviously, that people might want to build.
So today, in this preview, we have a .NET a full-fledged .NET assembly. So you cannot use it, for example, from WinRT. But moving forward, we'll add other platforms. Let's say that the client version of this thing will be available for different platforms. And the WinRT version is most definitely on top of our list.
Very cool.
OK, here, what do I have? Let me show you quickly what I have. This is one of the samples that you can download from our announcement blog post. And I have one MVC4 web API service, which just does basic stuff. It's a wrapper for a list of shippers. And then I have a WPF client, which is a classic WPF application, which just wants to hit this thing. And then I have this thing, which pretends to be your local IDFS, so that you can just download this sample, hit F5, and it will work without you having to configure anything. Also, it's tied to one pre-provisioned tenant. So it's literally F5, and you'll see it moving. And we have instructions for you to move this code to go against your own tenant. So it will be easy.
Awesome.
So here there is pretty much what I was talking about. Here there, this first line, I create this authentication context object, and I pass it an address. And this address is just, let me see. This is my tenant. I chose the name myself. Humongous Insurance Access Control.
I don't know if that's an LCA approved.
It is.
Oh, it is? Oh,
yes.
Really?
I went nice. From the approved names. Nice. I saw it and I say, I love you. I want you as my pre-provision tenant. And so I picked it. So as you can see, it's nothing strange. And if you would go with a Windows Azure Active Directory, like the directory tenant, this one is an ACS tenant, you'd have access, you'd have something similar, but you'd just have a substring here which defines your tenant. And the nice thing is that the code, the object model that you have, is exactly the same regardless one tenant or the other tenant. So for you, this convergence that we mentioned earlier already happened if you use AAR.
That's nice. So you could basically write a method that does it for you and pass in the appropriate tenant.
That is exactly right.
Cool.
So here we create our context and we do it just as we initialize our client. And then later, when we want to make our call, substantially, we just ask to the same object to find for us a token for this service. That's all we need to do. And we'll just get back this thing which contains the token. And then once you have it, here we just get this credential and we say create authorization header, which substantially extracts the token bits and puts it in a string which says bearer blank, so that you can just add it in your HTTP web request, make a request, and you're done. So three lines of code. So now let me just quite a bit simpler than
I'm no identity expert, and you know sometimes WIF could get sometimes complicated, but this seems super easy for someone to get started. So.
That's the hope, and. So here we have our little client, and we have wired to these to those buttons the fact that it's the first time that you are trying to call a service that needs authentication, and so all the code that you have seen will trigger when I click one of those. So let's say that I want to show all my shipwrecks. Here you have seen this little dialogue that came out. This is fully handled by AAL, and it's size depending on your machine, like it's all taken care of for you. And this is the list of your identity providers that are trusted by that service. If I'd be using a directory service here, I'd be seeing the directory prompt, because in that case, it's just the directory. And here I can choose whatever. I'll just go ahead and use my my local STS, which as you can see is not very secure. I'm telling you which users you can use and which password. So I won't even say that you shouldn't use these in prod.
Might have got a space on the end.
Yes, but I'm hoping it will work anyway.
Trim.
See?
Fancy.
And now it got the token, made the call, and we got our list. And here I can add stuff. I don't know. I want surface. I want 50 of those. I love that thing. And now I created this thing. Now, if we'd have more time, I would close this, reopen, enter as Mary, and show that if I try to do the same, it doesn't work because Mary doesn't belong to the red group.
Cool.
So in other words, you can do all the usual stuff that you can do with claims-based identity. So let's just take a very quick look on the service side. On the service side, this is a web API, so I won't go into the details, but what I have in here is just a delegating handler, like a message handler, which lives in front of my thing and extracts the token from the authorization header. And here I have the same dance that I described earlier. I create my context, which goes in the same place, and I add myself as the target service so that when I receive a token, the crypto of the token will always be, I would say, the same unless I do something custom. But I need to know that not only it comes from Windows Azure Active Directory, but it's also for me. Because specifically, I don't want anybody to reuse a token that was meant for somebody else. And then all I need to do is ask to the context to accept the token. And behind the scenes here, the system, this context reaches out to your tenant, reads all the metadata, finds out which keys should be used for checking the signature, finds out the details, the version of the protocol, the token format is being used, all details that you don't have to worry about. And this certificate thing, especially, in like, as you know, I spent a few years talking about this to people. And developers very often just don't have a familiarity with things like certificates, where do I keep them, how do I give permission to my app to use them, or stuff like that. And now all this stuff, in the best case, which is this one, you don't need to worry about it.
Cool.
Yeah. Sounds good.
I'm very, very glad.
You're finally making it easy.
We're trying. We're
Come on. I didn't know what you did around here, Vittorio. Come on. No, I'm just kidding. No, that's awesome. Yeah, it seems much simpler than and these are these distributed via NuGet also?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Cool.
In fact, if you right now in the, this is a preview, so we have a number of interesting things. Let me see. If I just go to install the packages, there you go.
Cool.
Right now, this guy is. I have to say, we have two flavors of NuGet. We have a 64 bits and 86 bits, because we have a native core.
I see.
Why do we have a native core? We have a native core because we are reusing some code that is being used for other products, which I can't tell you about. For a claim enabling them. But from a big smile, you can see that I'm very happy that claim-based identity is like spreading, like everybody is using it. Like now that we are in MS Core Lib, it's everywhere.
Nice.
But as we move forward, like the next time that we'll, well, I can't say if it will be exactly the next time, but as we move forward, the Windows Azure Authentication Library is going to be, for .NET, a fully managed package. Because today, you need to worry about the bitness of your target, the bitness of your machine. Yeah. When you target Windows Azure, you need to bring with you the runtime of the VC. And instead, not only it will be fully managed, we are also considering open sourcing it. So that if you use it plain vanilla, it is that easy. But of course, the other side of the coin is that if you want to customize it, there is no room for you to customize it, because we want to keep it super simple.
Yep.
But hey, you'll have a source code. So if you want to fork it, go ahead.
Awesome. Cool.
Nice.
Great. I bored you guys long enough.
It's all right. I wasn't even listening the whole time. No, I'm just kidding.
Let me step on your negative work. Fantastic.
No, that's exciting. Great. That's awesome. Look forward to giving it a go.
Yeah, I mean,
I know
that a lot of our toolkits that we, you know, the Windows Phone toolkit and things like that seem, I mean, we've done some stuff with Windows Identity Foundation, and it seems like we could actually use this library and some of those to simplify some of the auth code we do. So that would be cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you guys for having me.
Absolutely.
Keep up with a great job with the show.
Keep on keeping on. All right. Well, I think it's that time. You have you have one last thing for us. So
we've got a tip of the week.
Yeah,
we'll keep it short.
Yeah.
And we're back.
Excellent.
So this week's tip of the week comes from one of our fellow team members, Harshi. Now, Harshi's been doing a lot of great blogs recently, so it's definitely worth coming and checking out his blog to see what he's been writing about. But today's tip of the week is about saving storage space in Windows Azure Storage. So the basic premise that he come up with for this post is to do dynamic file slicing. So let's say if you're you have a company and you produce a lot of Word documents. Those documents may be stored in Windows Azure Storage. Now, what he moves on with as he goes out throughout this post is portions of those documents may be the same. Say, for instance, your document may have the same terms and conditions across all those documents and such. May have other sections that are typically the same within, you know, a number of your corporate documents. So what he proposes here is, rather than just doing a simple file compression and storing that up in blob storage, what you can do And this comes into play as well against document versioning. So if you're editing that document, saving it up there, you're getting V1, V2, V3, V4, mm-hmm. but all of these different versions are an identical copy of the file. So with the dynamic file slicing approach, what that does is it uses a smart algorithm to figure out where to block that document up. And then what you then get is you get a document that's made out of or composed of multiple blocks. So it may be blocks 1 to 13. And then you store the blocks in blob storage, and then you store a list of blocks that compose that document. So let's say now that you're doing different versions of a document, it's just a matter of sending up the block that has changed and updating that list. So now your ingress, for instance, which is free at the moment, I think, should still
it's
be.
Free.
Yeah. Ingress, you know, you're not charged on that, but storage-wise, you're only storing this delta of the document rather than multiple pieces.
Interesting.
Very cool.
And the pieces, the slices again, like you said, a document's made up of 1, 3, 6, and 7, say they're slices. A document could share, they share slices. Okay.
Yes. So you can also share slices across different documents.
Very cool.
So yeah, it's a pretty good blog post. This particular one goes in and he does go and look at some figures here. So in this case, he's saying, you know, shouldn't simple file compression save us lots of space as well? So if someone was asking him that, his response is along the lines of, so if you've got 1,000 1 meg documents that are mostly similar and they slice them into 10 100K blocks, you can see here on the screen, each document has only 2 unique blocks. The total space they need works out to 169 meg. Whereas if you're using a compression algorithm, you know, most good ones get about 30% of the original, you're going to have a 70% compression rate, and that's 300 meg. So slicing this into blocks for that type of document where there's a lot of reuse, for instance, is a lot more efficient.
Can you compress the blocks also?
Yes.
Okay.
So you could do that, then compress the blocks.
Cool.
Now, the thing where this really comes into play is if you're building some kind of product, driving your price down for your use of storage is going to give you a competitive edge on your competitors who may have another competing product.
Cool.
So it's pretty cool. In the blog post at the end, he writes, he's got a link to one of his blogs where he writes about the actual algorithm that you'd use for blocking this out. Because you can't just go and block it out based on, you know, every 100K of the file, turn that into a block, because it's not exactly a block within of written text.
So is this only with text documents, or is this with any kind of file?
Well, in this particular case, I'd say, and he doesn't go on to talk about that, but it does apply to textual things or things that you know, have logical blocks. It could be a presentation, could be a Word document, basically
code,
things where code,
gotcha.
Wherever you're reusing content.
Cool.
So really nice blog post and definitely worth thinking through.
All right. Well, that was a good tip of the week.
Yep.
So it's always nice when we don't have to write the code for the tip of the week ourselves. Save some time in our efforts to... Anywho. anyway, we'll probably call it a day with that.
Yeah, so thank you very much for coming on, Vittoria.
Thank you guys for having me.
Sorry
for blubbering for so long, but hey, that's exciting stuff.
You're good to have. Our ratings are always up when you're on the show. So you have some of the more popular episodes. So
great, I'm touched.
Absolutely, and we get paid per viewer of each episode.
Oh, fantastic. So let me do something really controversial.
Yeah, exactly. Then it'll be yes.
So the key things to remember from what you've shown us today are, WIF is now available via NuGet.
Yep.
The AAL basically allows you to do your auth scenarios in less than 3 lines of code, right?
When you write a rich client on when you are securing a REST API.
Yep. And is there anything else to summarize what people should take away?
Thanks for saying that. I think that the main thing would be take a very good look at Windows Azure Active Directory, because apart from the fact that the preview is really, really interesting and there are capabilities that we believe will help you with your business if you are creating cloud applications, I think that it's the model in itself of identity as a service is just too convenient for, like, it's incredibly convenient. It makes things so much easier. And I think it's important to taking a look to that, because it's coming, and I think it will be mainstream very soon.
Great.
Cool.
All right. Well, that's our show for the week. Thanks again for joining us. As always, follow us on at Cloud Cover Show on Twitter. If you have any feedback or questions, leave them in the comments on the blog or again, Twitter. And we will see you next. Well, I'll be gone next week. I'm on vacation, so
I'll be here next week.
You'll be here next week.
Taking control.
So look forward to that. You'll wear a tie again.
Yes.
Anyway. You wore a tie and
a print on tie.
That's okay. Yeah.
Now I wore a real tie with a polo the time after. Yeah. Anyway, it was ridiculous. But
very nice.
All right. Well, let's call it a day. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.